Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
What's up, everybody? This is Jeff Roney, and we will be talking about a few things, and they will just kind of happen. So, I'd like to welcome Mr. iSciFi TV, Mr. Jeff. How are you, sir? Good to see you there. And he has a great website. It is iSciFi.tv. And it's really cool stuff. A lot of very cool sci-fi fantasy stuff. And I am getting a Skype call. Let's see here. This is very interesting. I think William will be with us soon. Anyway, so, yes. And I was looking through his album of photos, and he went to the Ghost Rider premiere and Star Wars one-man show. So he's a kindred spirit of us, and that's a wonderful thing. So I'm glad you are here. And there we go. There's Mr. William. How are you, sir? Okay. He's muting. How are you, Jeff?
Hey, how's it going?
Going good, going good.
Hey, thanks for the plug.
Oh, no problem at all. So it is iSciFi.tv.
Yep, or www.i-sci-fi.com. That's the parent website that actually is live right now. With three authors from a con that was in Solid City last weekend.
Okay. Well, very good. One more time?
Oh, I'm just saying I'm triple tasking as always.
I see. Okay. I definitely like to talk to you offline about the way that you do your live show. So maybe we can kind of trade little pointers here and there.
No worries. Be glad.
Okay. Alrighty, Jeff, what I'm going to do is I'll mute you for right now. If you have something to add or ask a question, you can go ahead and shoot up your little hand with the icon on the right, and I'll know, okay?
Okay, talk to you new to me, so if I'm clunky, I apologize.
No problem. Okay, good to see you here, Jeff.
Thanks.
Okay, hang around. And
he just plugged our show to about 30 listeners in California.
All right. How's everybody?
Howdy, Jeff. This is William, your buddy Bill.
We have a bunch of different things going on tonight. I don't know if you caught that, but there is a kindred sci-fi fan who hosts his own live show, and he is
sci-fi TV.
That is correct, and he is triple casting at this point, and so he there you go. He plugged us, I plugged him, and he has a couple of folks on the line as well. So I want to kind of trade some little notes here and there with him and see how he does stuff. So he's got a really cool site, and I was just checking out his photos and stuff like that. So I'm glad he's on the line, and very interesting guy, and want to find out more about what he's doing. So
definitely, who knows? Maybe there's a way to use a phone bridge to join two live shows to one.
I don't know, man. I'm pretty psyched about all this connection stuff. So, okay, you are on the phone, Mr. Williams. So, okay, you must
That's
be having a little computer.
Yeah, I'm having some technical challenges right now. I've got things going at 10 miles an hour when I want them to go at 60, 65 miles an hour.
Okay. So you're still in the car?
No, actually I'm at home. I was using a driving metaphor for my internet connectivity.
Gotcha.
Are you having
okay.
trouble getting a talk shoe too?
I'm finding that navigating to the talk shoe site is problematic for me.
Yeah, I'm having the same trouble too. For some reason I can't get to it no matter what I do.
It must be that our show has all these people trying to join right now, and we're overloading their web server.
I think so. I think we're just taking over, and that's a good feeling. But it's not going to be as open-ended as I was really intimating, but we do want to talk about a couple of things, and actually, both are pretty cool, and one is actually very timely. So anyway, Colleen was looking for a job, and she has some good news, and so we kind of want to complete the job search show that we started a couple weeks ago. And so anyway, Colleen, kind of bring us up to date and give us some tips and pointers of what you've learned through this process.
Well, let's see. I start Monday with a company that is a very good company. And okay. I was fortunate enough to get this through a recruiter. But what's funny about it is that for so long, I tried and couldn't get anything. I was getting little random interviews here and there, and I had about 8 recruiters working for me, and I finally got an offer from a company that I found on my own. And I thought, wow, all these recruiters and nothing. And then as it turns out, the offer, while it was a nice offer, it was not the best offer because the following week, I got that offer on a Friday morning, and the following week, by the end of the week, Thursday, I had another 2 offers from 2 other companies, as well as a potential offer from yet a third that I stopped kind of in the middle because I already knew that the range was going to be out of range. But what's funny is the job that I did take, I did get through a recruiter, and it was the last recruiter I kind of added to my little collection. And he'd called me the previous week, and literally a week later, I got the job offer. So it was nice that I had all those offers coming in, and it was a little frustrating because that meant I had to sit there and think, well, which one's the right one? Which company do I want to work for? You know, Jeff said it. Either way I rolled it, it was going to come up 7. So it was a matter of looking at pros and cons, and you know, I talked to the recruiters. I was very honest with the recruiters, and I said, look, I'm having trouble, and I need to have answers to these questions. I need this information so that I can make a really good decision. I don't want to make a bad decision and be in the same spot I'm in 6 months from now. So I worked the recruiters. I was very blunt with them, and they came back with the answers, and they were very honest with me and said, look, you know, one of my issues was the concern was a safety concern. The company where I'm working and the campus I'm going to be on is in a questionable neighborhood. It's getting better, but it is still questionable, and that was a concern for me, and they understood the concern, and they went back to the folks I'm going to be working for and said, hey, here's her concern. What can you say that will, you know, help alleviate her fears? And they actually got back to me email and were really very upfront and gracious and said, look, you know, yeah, it is a questionable neighborhood. It's understandable, but, you know, we've been working here for 3+ years and we've never had any problems, and the company wouldn't leave us here if it was a problem. So it all worked itself out. The things that I did learn, I'm sorry, what?
Just before we go into that, if you don't mind, Jeff, do you have anything to add about job recruiters? Jeff?
He might be talking to his people.
Okay. All right.
at any rate, what I was going to say is that, you know, one of the things I pointed out was get a lot of recruiters. And I can honestly say it was very true, and it's a very good tip. The reason I say this is because the recruiting company that I technically am a consultant that has been placed with the company. And the only way that would have happened is by going through this particular recruiter. If I had chosen not to contact them, if they didn't have my resume, if they didn't know who I was, I would not have gotten in where I am. And I would probably still be searching, or I would have taken a job that would have been, you know, less money and would have been, you know, worse benefits. I have fabulous benefits. They're going to kick in a lot sooner than most companies will allow benefits to kick in. I've got a lot of other little perks and things that I just wouldn't have anywhere else. So I'm very happy that I did get more than one recruiter, because the original recruiter I started working with, they ended up getting me an offer from the other company, but it wasn't nearly as good as this one. And when I let them know what the other recruiter had offered me, or the other company offered me, they didn't do anything to counter it. They didn't even attempt to counter it. So, you know, it worked in my favor to have multiple recruiters.
Let's try one more time. Jeff, are you there?
Greetings, Earthlings.
Yes.
What's sorry up? About that. Hey, I work for a company that I've been there 14 years, and our client that I've been working with for the last 7.5 decided to offshore it to India.
Ooh.
And we actually got a 5-month warning, which was unheard of nowadays, that a layoff was coming. But from day one, I had been working with five different recruiting agencies, mm-hmm. and none of them have brought anything to the table that's even close to what I make or even matching my skill sets. And like Sweetie, I've done consulting, and that's how I got in with a company that is very interested in my skills. And I'm doing better on my own than any recruiter's ever done for me.
Okay.
And in fact, I have five different recruiters calling for the same company that I already interviewed with, that their hours were ridiculous and the pay wasn't comparable to what I was making already.
Mm-hmm. Now, Sweetie, her name is Colleen. Now, she also had a couple of leads on her own as well.
Yeah, I did. I did. And unfortunately, just because of the fact that one of them was a really, it would have been a really great opportunity if the money weren't the issue. Unfortunately, they just couldn't come near to what I needed. And the reason for that is just because it's a very young company and they just don't have that kind of capital to be able to, you know, to support me with the
right.
kind of money I needed. So that was the unfortunate reality. And then the wonderful thing about it, though, is that the guy that would have been my boss, he completely understood when I explained to him that unfortunately the money just wasn't, I couldn't make it work financially for us. And he said, you know what, I completely understand. He says, you know, we're really disappointed that we won't get to work with you. We really think you could have brought some really great things to our company. And, you know, I completely understand. If you find yourself still looking in the future, by all means, give us a call. We would love to have you come on board. And if you need references, I'll be happy to supply them for you. And that to me was like such a great, I mean, that was an astonishing thing to hear from a guy who was making me an offer and I'm turning him down, you know, to do that. Now what's sad is that, you know, again, this didn't come through my recruiter and, you know, I don't know that it would have been negotiated as well if I had gone in, you know, through the recruiter. So it was kind of a sad thing. One of the things I did learn about having the recruiters is that don't just rely on the recruiter. If you are thinking that a job's going to just drop in your lap, it doesn't happen very often. It's about as rare as lightning striking. So you kind of have to take the initiative to get, you know, get stuff going on your own too. Don't just rely on the recruiters. If you know that your recruiters are going to work with certain companies or that they do work with certain companies, it is very best that you don't go try to pursue an opening in those companies, because they are probably going to get you in faster and easier than doing it on your own. But by all means, any other company that you know of that they don't work with, go for it, because you just never know. I actually did, right after I got the job, and the following week after I'd already accepted the offer, I got a couple of phone calls from two companies that I had pursued on my own, finally getting back to me. And I had to explain to them, I'm really sorry, but I took another job somewhere else. So that was kind of the thing. So by all means, do that. And let's see, what was the other thing? There was one other point I was going to make.
Let me step here really quick.
Okay.
Go ahead, Jeff. You had something to add?
You know, the interesting thing in Utah, and tell me if I sound better than before. Testing, testing. Anyway, the tech market in Utah is quite small. If you go to Monster, Dice, or any of the recruiting websites, 90% of the tech jobs are saturated with the same recruiting company, and they have probably 20, 30 people working just in the Salt Lake City area. And I noticed really quick they don't talk to each other, because I had one recruiter call me on a Tuesday about a position, and I said, well, I've already interviewed with the company and I didn't accept the position, and the very next day I got called from the same company but different recruiter about the same job.
That is very true, and that's not just in Salt Lake, by the way. That is very true. I've had I don't know how many recruiters say to me, oh, has anybody ever talked to you about going here? I was going to send your resume. Okay, well, good thing you didn't. And then I've had people who've said, we're going to send your resume over here. Is that okay? And I'm like, well, I've already pursued that position with that through another recruiter. And the unfortunate thing is that, yeah, it's a definite advantage when you do get recruiters, multiple recruiters working for you. Be honest with them and let them know that you're working with other recruiters, because otherwise they sit there and assume that they're the only ones. And then when they find out they're not, it either prompts them to speed things up a little bit or they give up. I had one who basically just said, oh, you're working with this company? Oh, well, never mind then. I'm not going to pursue anything for you, because they're going to get you where I can't. So that's the one thing you do want to be careful of, is, you know, make sure you do tell them I'm working with other people, not just you. And then that way they know, and you'll get a sense right away whether or not they're going to do anything for you or not. The other thing I would say is to make sure your resume is consistently updated, and make sure you have some really specific keywords. I had my resume, which I thought was a really good resume, and I knew it was because I'd gotten some bites off of it, and my original recruiting company was pretty satisfied with it. But the minute that I had another recruiting company, the one that actually got me the job that I'm starting on Monday, they said, he said, I need you to put some keywords in here. I know you have this experience. Or if you don't, then that's one thing. But if you do, then I need you to make sure that your resume actually has these specific keywords in it, because that's what this company is going to look for. And if you've got that experience, if you don't have the keywords in your resume, they'll just pass you by. So you have to make sure you have specific keywords to your particular skill set, your particular background. As a business analyst, I'm very familiar with all sorts of documentation styles, and one very popular one right now is use cases, and I didn't have that word in my resume anywhere. Nowhere did I have anything about being able to write use cases. I would always reply that I can when asked in interviews, but I knew that I wasn't going to get any more interviews if I didn't start putting that in there, because I just noticed it wasn't in there. And I stuck it in there, and all of a sudden I started getting bites left and right like you cannot even begin to imagine. And I kicked myself for not having caught that it wasn't in there, because I presumed that people would just automatically assume it if I'd put in there, I can do functional specs, I can do business requirements, I can do workflow diagrams, blah, blah, et cetera. That word et cetera doesn't necessarily translate to be, yes, use cases. And people do look for certain words, so be really cautious on what you put in there, and make sure that if your industry or your background or your position has specific skill sets, that you make sure those are in there. But don't lie on the resume. Oh, I talked about this before. Don't lie on your resume. If you say you have experience with something and you've only seen it once in your lifetime and never actually did anything with it, don't say you did it, because the minute you do and you get in that job and you try to do something and you do it completely wrong, you're done for. And they'll figure out the lie. There's another thing I was going to point out too. Oh, consistently update your resume, but also repost it out there on the job board. That's really important, to make sure that you keep posting a new one, because I got a phone call from a recruiter, an HR recruiter, who apparently had a resume that I'd posted probably 3-4 months ago. And I've since updated it. So it's really important that you kind of consistently, and then you'll get frequently a lot of people calling you going, can you send me your most current resume? And they should know that it's out there on Monster Dice or Career Builder, but it's always good to just keep it up, updated out there. Let's see. I guess the only other thing I can think of is that, you know, interviewing process, everyone gets really frustrated about that and gets a little nervous, and how do you answer questions properly? And I just say, look, be yourself. They're going to see right through it if you're faking it. They're going to see right through if you're trying to lie your way through something, if you're trying to oversell yourself. Be yourself. Be professional. And make sure that you remain calm. I know that's easier said than done, but the way it was explained to me, and it really has helped me in the last couple months, and believe me, I've had quite a few interviews, I'm not there to try and get the job. I'm there interviewing them to see if I really want to work with them. Because that's something that a lot of people forget. They get desperate. They feel like they need to have a job, and they have to have that job, and they have to get it at all costs, and they're willing to sacrifice anything and everything. But let me tell you, if you get yourself stuck in a job that you're unhappy with just because you feel like you have to have a job, you're going to be miserable, and it's not worth it. Absolutely not worth it in the long run. So, you know, you are there as much as you need the job, especially when you're in a position like I was in where I was laid off and very unemployed. You know, if you're in a position where you really need to have a job, you still need to keep your head about you and realize that you're actually interviewing for the position to see if you – interviewing the company to see if you want to work for them. So that was pretty much my experience, and I'm really grateful for the fact that I'm starting a job on Monday, and that it's a good company, and that it's good money and incredible benefits and close to home, and it's just an all-around good job. Oh, that was the other thing I was going to talk about, consulting. A lot of people get really nervous when you talk about consulting because technically I am a consultant. I am working for the recruiting company. I am actually employed by them, and I'm going to be resourced or, you know, assigned to the national company that everyone knows the name. And everybody gets really nervous about recruiting or consulting. You know, oh my gosh, consulting, da-da-da. Well, let me tell you the perks and benefits of consulting, because I was a little nervous about it too. Consultants usually make a lot more money, and I'm not talking like, you know, a couple thousand dollars a year more. We're talking usually anywhere from 10 to 15 more than a permanent employee would make. That's a lot of money. And it can be even actually bigger than that. I mean, that's kind of, it depends on the industry, so don't quote me on that. It's not a guarantee, but it is usually you find that you do make a lot more money than the permanent employees do. A lot of companies treat their consultants like permanent employees. For example, the company I will be working for, they don't distinguish the difference between their permanent employees and their consultants, because actually the majority of their employees are the consultants.
But do the consultants get any benefits?
Yes, they do, and not all.
That's pretty untypical.
That's absolutely true. As a consultant, there are different ways you can look at it, and here are some very important hints to know. When you talk to a company, a recruiting company or whomever that gets you the consulting position, the first question out of your mouth should be benefits. What are the benefits? Where will I even get benefits? Because you're going to, you're either going to get your benefits paid through the recruiting company, and they will usually pay the majority of your benefits. So it's just like you would if you're going through, if you're a permanent employee. So it's really, really, really nice. The second thing is that you want to also see, it depends on if you're a salaried consultant or a hourly consultant, because there are differences. I'm a salaried consultant, so my benefits are basically paid for. If I were to be an hourly consultant, then I would have to increase my hourly rate by about 30% to cover the cost of me having to pay for my benefits. Because
right,
when
and I
you,
think that's where you usually get the – I think that's usually why, as a consultant, you can expect – a certain percentage more, because they're expecting that you're having to pay for your own stuff. And often they can drop you on a dime. I mean, if they're going to have cutbacks, they might have permanent staff which has certain knowledge or networks they're going to keep, but a consultant, yeah, blow you to the wind.
Usually go first. Well, because consultants are usually paid higher salaries. And yes, I see that Texas Sims is one of the good ones. Actually, Texas Sims has really good benefits. There are many, many companies out there, recruiting companies, that do offer full benefits, and there are others that don't. In fact, with my consultant, you know, company, I actually have a 401k. They don't match, so then I have to make the determination, do I then maybe increase my contribution percentage a little higher than you know, than I would normally do if I was a permanent employee getting a match, or do I tuck something away in the, you know, on the for the rainy day kind of a thing? But I also have a really, really good rollover IRA from my last two companies that has like a 30% return of a rate of return over a 2-year period of time, so it's not bad. Actually, it's almost 50%. But anyway, the point being that you know, depending on what you have, it's always good to charge your, you know, it's always good to make sure you have a higher rate if you're going to be an hourly consultant, because you will end up having to pay for your own benefits. The other good thing about it being a consultant is that you can get a feel for a company and say, yes, you know what, I really do want to work here. And if they turn around and like you and want to make you an offer, it's a perfect match made in heaven. You just slide right in the door. You don't have any learning curve or anything like that. If you decide that you don't like it and you've done a contract for, you know, a 12-month contract as a consultant, at the end of 12 months, you can see you later. It's been nice, but I'm out of here. And then you can go on your own merry little way. So there's advantages to that as well. You know, you learn different industries, and you can get yourself, you know, a lot of good skills by being a consultant. It's not for everybody. Not everybody likes doing consultant work, but I'm actually looking forward to it. So, and I see that you work on as a consultant on your own, and you charge 50-60% more than a salaried person might. Yeah, that's actually really good. That's pretty high, but a lot of companies are willing to pay that. Hourly rate, oh my goodness, your hourly rate is insane, dude.
Actually, I'm cheap considering what the going rate is for, you know, this is short-term stuff, like 1 or 2 week gigs. Getting $100 an hour. The company I am working for starting in July, which is perfect because my current job's gone on June 29th. You know, just it's all about timing. But
yeah,
I charge them $80 an hour, and then they pay me a retainer, which is great. Because I'm too expensive as a consultant, they want me full time, and they're going to need me full time.
Wow.
So I'm getting in on the ground level, and I had to do this all on my own. I was referred to them by a friend and solved a bunch of their issues, and you know, I was told, let's go meet with the salespeople. Well, I ended up meeting the CFO, the CAO, and the principal stockholder, and I about died because I had never in my life met an executive of a company face to face. Because I've always been, you know, one of the employees, so to speak.
Right. One of those us lowly grunts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what is it that you do for a living? Because that makes a difference.
In a nutshell, I have been doing technical support and escalations for Nortel Networks. And if you're familiar with that company, they do everything from phones to network hardware to software, to voice over IP, so.
Okay, you're really very much on the communication side.
Right.
Yeah, and that makes sense, and that explains why your rate's a little higher. For somebody like me, you know, and for the average IT person, most IT people don't make that kind of, you know, an $80 to $125 an hour rate. I'd say the average is anywhere from $40 to $80. Is what most IT people make, depending on what they do. I mean, developers obviously make a lot more.
Right, and the nice thing is, though, is when I get on full-time, I'll be making less than that $80 an hour, but more than I'm making on my full-time job.
Which is awesome, because that's great that, yeah, it's good that you've clearly worked out a really good contract for yourself, and that's awesome. That's awesome. And it's not an easy thing to do, and I don't think a lot of people could just kind of do that on their own. You do, I don't know how long you've been doing this, but I know that for the last 3 months of dealing with consultants and, you know, talking to people who've been there and kind of, you know, I'm like, I don't consider myself an expert, but I certainly understand the pratfalls and the pitfalls of doing it. So I've learned the hard way, you know, trial by fire in the last 3 months, what's good, you know, what's a good thing to do and what's, you know, not a good thing to do. So it's an interesting scenario to be in. And, you know, I feel for the people who are in it, you know, and it's funny. What I found really helped too, and I think we talked briefly about it last time, is, you know, when our company laid everybody off or laid off the majority of the people, the second round, I was in the first round, the second round of people, they all decided, hey, somebody decided we should get a group going, a message group going out on Google so we can all talk and, you know, pass ideas around. And I still get daily emails for people going, hey, I have a recruiter who has an open position here or, you know, doing this and blah, blah, blah. So it's kind of a really cool communication format for those of us that, you know, unfortunately got laid off and who maybe had a tough time of it. And that's actually how I found that the company that was the little small startup that offered me a, you know, a really nice position, but just couldn't offer me what I really needed. So anyway, so that's the thing, is that, you know, get yourself to a support group, a board, message board, and especially when you're in a layoff situation, it's really nice to have people who are in the same boat as you, who understand what's going on and maybe can offer you helpful information. Just my take.
Very good. Well, it's very interesting, this whole talk to thing and the internet, how it pulls people together. And just kind of skimming around on Jeff's site, and he's a very interesting guy, and then find out that he has a lot in common with us and working in the you know, software, computer-ish kind of thing. So, you know, what's interesting is, you know, the more people I meet on the internet through sci-fi, especially if they're in the southern states or Midwest, they're, you know, computers, I don't know. I have not met a lot of, you know, computer software people. There's people that use the internet for a lot of different reasons, audio work or whatever, but it's just interesting that I actually find somebody that I can, like, kind of, you know, run off things and they understand what I'm talking about. So anyway, Jeff, again, glad you're here, and we got a lot of stuff going on. So, Colleen has found a job, so that is fantastic.
Woohoo!
So. Yes, it is, and I'm very happy about it because, believe me, yeah, it's fun. It's fun being off for the first couple weeks because you're like, woohoo, I don't have to get up early. I can stay up as late as I want. I don't have to go to work. I don't have to go sit in any boring meetings. I don't have 8 billion people coming to me asking me for this, that, or the other thing. It's awesome. And then you pretty much kind of go, yeah, but I'm kind of sitting here by myself, and there's not really much to do except for watch TV and play on the computer, and I'm really tired of that. And I could go to the gym, but, oh, I don't want to. Get out of that. I want to stay in my pajamas all day, and it gets really old after a while. old after a while.
So we're going to make a segue into a different subject, a subject we kind of been sitting on for a while, and we're going to let the cat out of the bag. And also, I just want to let you know that Tony G may be emailing me to get on the show, so if I kind of skip in and out, that's why. But anyway, so just to kind of give a little intro, Colleen's family has had a star in its past, actually a couple of them, but really focusing on Bartlett Robinson, who was Colleen's grandfather. He was a stage actor, radio actor, did a lot of TV parts, was in a few films. So, you know, Bartlett Robinson is a name you will know if you check it out, IMDb, some other sites like that. Also, his wife, Gigi, also was a dancer.
Well, her name was Gigi, though.
What now?
Her name was Margot. And
Margot.
Gigi was on the,
her
yeah,
name was
she,
Margot. She
yeah.
was a dancer. Oh, sorry.
I mean, Billy. No, her name is Margot. Gigi was the nickname that my sister's kids call her because she was great grandma. So that's
okay.
the only reason why they call her Gigi.
So,
I throw that in there.
Sure, that is how a lot of the folks in the family, you know, got this bug to be an actor, actress, or in the case of my wife Colleen, you know, she's a trainer. So. It's kind of funny to kind of look forward in the family and see how the genes of these actors and that kind of thing kind of move about. And it seems that the acting bug has hit your sister's family.
Yes.
So pretty big. Let's kind of start with how, you know, maybe kind of focus on Noah originally. But then kind of work our way out. How did the whole thing start?
How did the whole thing start? Well, let's see. It actually kind of started with my niece, Taylor. And
okay.
she really, she's always kind of been this little dramatic little thing, even from the time she was really, really little. And she's only nine now. It's not like, she's, you know, a teenager or anything, but she was always putting on plays at the house. She'd go around when she was like 5 and 6 years old, and she'd write plays, and she would like get her little brothers and even Noah, who's her older brother, she would get them to play these parts, and they would go and practice, and then she would have a book or a little chart thing, and if they didn't do something right, she'd put a mark in there, you know, next to their name, and just funny stuff. So anyway, she put on these little plays for the, you know, for my mom and my dad and my sister and brother-in-law and anybody else who'd watch. So my sister started looking around for children's theater, and she found a performers academy near their house. And she started enrolling Taylor in these things, and Taylor would, you know, go to classes like 5 days a week where she would take acting and dancing and singing and painting and, you know, voice, that kind of stuff. And so they'd put on little plays, and Taylor was always in the little plays, and it was so cute. And she's really very good. She's quite the little performer. She loves being in the spotlight. She's not nervous in the least. She sings on key, which is surprising for a child. She's just very talented. Well, she started doing this, and then all of a sudden, Noah, who'd been really heavily involved in sports, and Noah was really heavily involved in sports, not because Noah likes sports, but because my brother-in-law is a sports fanatic. And so he kind of started getting a little interested in this and said, hey, can I go do it too? So he went to these workshops, and he started enjoying doing it and started doing little plays and things and started being involved. And pretty soon he was getting lead parts, and he and Taylor were getting the lead parts in these plays. And the Performers Academy ended up, one of the teachers decided to break off and start her own little academy. And so they went with her. And they've done quite a few plays. Noah's really surprised everybody, I think. Not because we don't think he's talented, but because he really never showed much of an interest before, like a year ago. And now he's like this budding star where they got an agent to come and look at them, and the agent just absolutely fell in love with Noah and said, we've got to book this kid. We got to sign him. And they started, you know, booking him on or scheduling him to go on auditions, and he finally booked a commercial, a Volkswagen commercial, and he got to go up to L.A. and shoot at this private residence up there and had a lot of fun with it, and he just looked at my sister and goes, Mom, I don't want to ever go back to school. I want to be on set all the time. He just absolutely fell in love with it. And the unfortunate thing is the commercial is only shown in German-speaking countries. I was kind of hoping they'd maybe make a version of it here for America, but, you know, what do you do? So, anyway, then he started getting more and more auditions. He'd get callbacks, and he was almost, I mean, I think like 99% of them, he would get a callback. And so we were, you know, he's going to book something else, we're sure of it. He auditioned for several movies that are actually coming out soon, which is kind of funny because, you know, I've known about these movies for a long time now, and they're just now starting to be talked about. And, you know, oh, Noah should have been in that movie. He could have totally played that part and da-da-da-da. So anyway, he booked another show or a bit part on a show. It was just a small little one-liner on a show called All of Us, which is created and produced by Will and Jada Pinkett Smith.
Right.
They're not actually on the show except for they've done guest spots and stuff, but they're on the show, or they pretty much created the show, and they did a little guest spot, and we had a little debut party when the show aired in January, and it was really quite amazing to see him do this. And he goes up to Hollywood at least once a week, it seems, and sometimes even two and three times a week. You know, he's consistently getting callbacks, and since the All of Us, he booked two more commercials, one of which is being shown in Italy. It's for the Italian version of Spam, the lunch meat. And the premise of the commercial is the Addams Family, and so he played Pugsley. And they had him made up to look very much like Pugs. It was kind of freaky, weird. And so he enjoyed doing that. That was just a real simple thing, one shot. But then the big one that's been a really good thing for them is Got Milk, the California Milk Processing Board, came up with this idea. And spam it, Shelly. That's funny, Bill. That is hilarious.
Okay. Before we dive into that, I just want to quick kind of make a couple of points as we were going through. First of all, that there is ability to do commercials worldwide.
Absolutely. It's amazing how many amazing how many international commercials are filmed here in the States, and how many of them use American actors. I mean, everybody's heard about the fact, oh, you know, Brad Pitt's over in, you know, Japan hawking, you know, tennis shoes and, you know, Pepsi. Yeah, he is. And yes, that does happen a lot. A lot of very, very well-known A-lister celebrities are actually very well-known in other countries because they're, you know, spokespeople for different products. But they also do a lot of commercials here, and they film them here, and they show them in, you know, Europe and Asia and South America and where have you. So it is a very big deal. I mean, let's face it. People may say, you know, okay, New York is an entertainment capital, but New York is the theater capital. No getting around that. New York is where theater happens. L.A. and Hollywood are basically where the rest of entertainment happens. Yeah,
what about
London?
Bollywood?
Right.
Bollywood.
Yeah, Bollywood is different. Bollywood is a whole different ball game. And I think the reason why is because Bollywood's very, very, very popular.
You're like the uncle with Tourette's that kind of wakes up now and again. You're the funniest guy, dude, I swear.
It's very funny.
Like,
that's just because you have me on video cam and you think I'm funny looking.
No,
I did have an Uncle Bill.
Now you've got another one.
Well,
yeah.
Well, you know what? He's actually no longer with us, so you know.
I agree.
But
great.
Anyway, I digress. Bollywood's very different. Bollywood is known for the movies. But I don't know that Bollywood comes across with any, I mean, maybe they do commercials and things like that, but I've never seen any Bollywood commercials.
Just let it go. He's trying to just kind of sway off. You mentioned it, and that's good.
Anywho,
Candy.
He will continue trying. Yeah. All right. I think one of the really coolest moments that I was, fortunate to be a part of, was they had a big premiere party for Noah, for when he was on All of Us, and I thought that. There's a couple of different ways you could look at it. It's like, oh, they're overstating something, or, oh, they're just whatever. But, it was really nice. They said, whether this is the first time he does it or the last time he does it, we want to make sure that he knows that we support him and we love him. And it was really kind of a fun night, getting everybody together, all the kids, his friends, and watching him on television. And, how did you feel about that?
Me? Oh, I thought it was awesome. Yeah. I mean, it was kind of a fun little thing. It's a memory that he'll never forget. My sister and brother-in-law, well, my parents too, but my sister and brother-in-law really wanted to let him know that they're supportive of his, his choice right now, and that they'll do whatever they can. They're willing to go through as many open doors as they can to further his acting career, if that's what he wants to have for himself, now or in the future or both. But they're also recognizing that, they're just going to, they're going to enjoy the 15 minutes of fame for as long as the 15 minutes last.
Right.
Because they recognize that it could go away at any point in time, and this may be the only thing he ever does. Well, it wasn't the only thing he's ever done, and it's not, and it looks like he's got a few more things in the hopper. Right now, he's got another pilot for a TV show that's coming out this fall called 1321 Clover, and he does a really small part in there, guest spot on that. But there's room for it to be a recurring character, and there's rumor that that is a possibility. But, again, that's just rumor at this point in time. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens with that. The other thing that he did, the really big thing that has not even, it's huge, and it's really not even, burst out as far as it could go, and it'll get much bigger as it goes nationwide, is the Got Milk, which I started to mention earlier. He did a commercial, he did actually 7 commercials for Got Milk, and he played the same character. It was a family. They're being shown right now only in California on TV, but you can go to gettheglass.com. Website, and there's a game that you can play, and then you can also view the spots, and it'll show you all 7 commercials there. And it's a family, but the premise is that for whatever reason, there's only 1 glass of milk left on Earth, and it's being heavily guarded. Yeah, heavily guarded under extremely high-tech supervision in a place called Fort Fridge, which is kind of like Fort Knox. And this family, they're bumbling idiots. They have no concept of how to be burglars at all, but they're so desperate that they're trying to break into Fort Fridge to steal the glass of milk. And Noah's very, very funny in these commercials, and he and the father interact very, very well. And it's been a really interesting, it's kind of funny, I watched this kid take his first breath in this world, and to watch him at 11 years old on TV and to see him 2-3 times a day, because they're showing his commercials all the time. It's just wild. It's just wild to look at it and go, oh my God, that's my nephew. Oh my God. I changed his diapers when he was a baby. It's kind of funny to watch. And it's really interesting to see, because he really is very talented. And again, when he was a little bit younger, he was really the quiet kid, the one who all he wanted to do was read or play video games. And now he's he can schmooze with the best of them. The kid had a video conference with Jerry Bruckheimer. And let's face it, Jerry Bruckheimer's a big name in Hollywood. A really big name in Hollywood. He had a video conference with the guy and was like, hey, my name's Noah. How are you doing? You're Jerry, right? Oh, well, and he had no concept who he was. And they purposely made sure that they didn't overwhelm him, because they wanted him to be himself and not be self-conscious when he met Jerry Bruckheimer, They told him who he was afterwards, and he was just in awe because he absolutely loved Pirates, the Pirate movies. So he was just freaked out that he, like, met the guy, but he was so cool about it. You know, he went to an audition for there's a show on ABC called In Case of Emergency, and he auditioned for that show to be a regular on that show, and they had him actually reading with Jonathan Silverman and Greg Gerwig, who are two of the main characters on their, you know, their series regulars, and they were laughing hysterically. He had them in stitches, and he was, you know, just very charming, and they absolutely loved him, and they made a different decision. I don't know why, but they did. And, you know, I mean, he's done that with, like, a ton of – he walks into an audition, and everybody just asks him, like, oh, my God, this kid is amazing, and blah, blah, blah. We just love him. And, you know, he's done very well for himself. It's not an easy thing. I think I read somewhere that Jason Priestley – I'll have to look it up. But I remember very distinctly he went on a number of auditions and didn't get anything until, like, let's see, what was it? Oh, where'd it go, man? This is crazy. I know I read it.
Well.
So I have no idea what it is. But anyway, right. The point being that he went on a number of auditions and maybe it was Matthew Fox. No, I don't know. It was one of those guys. Anyway, it was some TV guy who Scott Wolf, I bet you that's who it was. Anyway, one of them went on like 200 and some odd auditions before he even got anything. I mean, didn't even get anything. And he finally landed some big part. It was just okay. Unbelievable. And here, Noah, okay. He, you know, got multiple, he's been on multiple auditions and has had multiple jobs, so kind of funny.
Let me ramble a bit, and then we'll see if Bill has something to add, and then we'll kind of jump in. I'll give you a point that we kind of want to talk about is the thing I want to say is I grew up in a pretty conservative Christian home, and TV and movies were evil. You know, actually, the original list, I think, was Cards, Jacks. No, probably not Jacks, but Cards, roller skating, you know, dancing, you know, were all, you know, could lead you to, you know, sin and, you know, all this kind of stuff. So especially movies and television. And the thing I really respect about Kimberly and Greg is that they are open to the talents of the kids. And if their talent is acting, they say then, you know, in their mind, you know, the kids can be a light in, you know, a dark area. I mean, you know, and if you don't think Hollywood is a dark area where there's a lot of, you know, trips and traps and stuff like that. I mean, look at Lindsay Lohan. That's just one name today, I said. So it's a place where, you know, you have enough money, you can get anything you want and get in all kinds of trouble. But I'm pretty happy with the fact that they allow the kids to make choices based on their talent, and they're there with them and they watch them and they make sure, you know, that they have, you know, grown up time and, you know, whatever. But anyway, I just kind of wanted to throw that out as well, because I think if you grew up in a religious construct, I think that's one of the things is, you know, oh, you know, Hollywood's evil and everybody shoots up drugs all the time and there's nothing good there. And you know, it's interesting. I didn't put this story out, but when I interviewed Chris Sonnenberg, there was a really cool story I'll release at some point that one of the directors of one of the films, the Disney animated films, a friend of his was told this director about Chris and said that, you know, he's starting out in animation and he has a lot of questions and I want to make sure that he doesn't make the wrong choices. So will you pray for him? And this guy did. And you know, this is in Hollywood. So You know, the bottom line is there's all kinds of people in Hollywood, and I think if you got talent, and obviously we're seeing that with Noah and Gumption, you know, and a good support system, I think it can be a positive thing. Colleen has been a part of a lot of the whole process of, you know, going to auditions and all this kind of stuff. Bill was he was an extra for the producers. And, I mean, you've probably known people in the biz. And what is your take about just the whole process of getting an audition and waiting for the phone to ring and all this kind of stuff?
Well, I think as Colleen was mentioning anecdotally, you know, it can be heartbreaking. Or it can happen in a flash. You know, there's always the story that they like to show in A Star Is Born type movies where, you know, the guy's bussing tables or the gal is working as a waitress and a producer or casting director comes in and, gosh, they always make casting directors sound like such a glamorous position too. And they see him and they're like, "I like the moxie on you, kid. I've got a job for you. Come on down." And then it's, you know, 3 months in a whirlwind thing of tap dancing and parties, and next thing you know, they're the big hit. Maybe that worked in the 40s or 50s. I don't even think it worked then. But in general, I think there's plenty of people out there in the entertainment business trying to get in is kind of a weird idea. It's like so many people are always in and out, in and out, different levels of participation. And for the most part, it's hard work. You know, I mean, of course, they're not going to sell that to you on TV and Us Weekly or something like that. But plenty of them are going to be pounding the pavement, going, you know, playing two different shows a night, not turning up their nose at doing, you know, a benefit, a banquet, a retirement home, a corporate gig or two, a cruise ship, a bar mitzvah, just getting out there and doing everything. It's like, well, all I do is serious film acting. No, you're going to go tie balloons if you want to get your name out there and have people take you seriously, that you're willing to work. You're not going to show up at your first commercial shoot and say, "I'm not going to do it unless I have a whole bowl full of orange M&Ms. They'll be like, "Here's the curb. Enjoy." Because they've got so many people who want the chance. I was on a soapbox. I've got plenty of them. And, you know, soap doesn't even come in these sturdy boxes anymore. It's all cardboard today.
So what you say is true, is that, I mean, sometimes you have to do it all. And the one thing that you may say, I'm not going to do that. You know, and I'm not talking about any kind of, you know, slanderous things, but I'm just saying, you know, and doing a dinner, doing a cruise ship, whatever. The one thing that you may not do may be the thing that there's a talent scout there, and you may blow it.
Or it could even just be another person that's working on the same gig that, you know, has a great project that they're working on, and they like you and they want to pull you in. They're like, "Hey, I've got a two-person routine I've been practicing, but the other guy left. You want to fill in?"
Right.
And "Or I need someone to fill in for the audition because they've got laryngitis." Why not? You know, some of the most interesting teams out there were born from happenstance and circumstance, and some people had great team, you know, pair or trio experiences before they went on to do their own thing. I mean, David Letterman, he didn't just show up on late night TV one time going, "What'd you do this weekend, Paul?" and throwing pencils. You know, he worked with other people, and he spent time as a writer, I think he had hair back then. But
what's fascinating about that too is that I didn't mean to cut you off, but if you look at that and really, really see that, these people that have, you know, started in the business and kind of paid their dues, and I'm talking people like Dave Letterman, I'm talking about people like Steve Martin, you know, these guys have staying power. They've been doing this for a really long time, but they worked really hard to get where they are. And
I think it's great that Adam West...
And like Lindsay Lohan and Britney Spears, who are yesterday's, you know, trash, because they just jumped into it. Oh, and people will say, yeah, but they started when they were little teenagers. Yeah, they started off being good little girls, and they got really crazy, really stupid, really fast. You get these flash in the pans, and you don't want that. You want somebody who's been really working really, really hard, because they're the ones that are going to have that staying power, and they're ones that are going to have the big career, even if it's not in the front of the spotlight. You're talking about people who, who worked hard for it. It looks so easy, and everyone goes, oh, I could do that. My kid could do that. Not really, because if so, your kid would be doing that.
Well, either that or, I mean, let's face it, there's a when people often are asked in groups or whatever to list fears, death often comes in a second or third after performing live in front of other people. Being made to look a fool or to act or to do something. I don't know how many times you might have ever experienced holding a microphone or a telephone up to someone and say, hey, say something. I don't want to say. Or, I'm not ready to talk. I mean, it's like, come on. What do you have to risk? Well, I don't want to sound stupid. I might embarrass myself. I tell you what, if you want to get into entertainment, the first thing you have to throw out the window is a fear of embarrassment. The second thing you probably get rid of is any drugs, because we can see that that doesn't have a good impact on your career, if there is one. But, you know, that's up to you to decide. But, I think most people think that some of the trappings are interesting and desirable, but they might find that the actual work and responsibilities get the better of them.
Yeah, okay. It's true. No, it's absolutely true, and I can attest to that, because I know that when Noah did the pilot for 1321 Clover, you know, he had to be on the set. You have to go to wardrobe one day, usually the day or two before the actual taping. If there's a rehearsal, you have to go to the rehearsal. So, like, he had to go to a rehearsal day and spend a couple of hours doing rehearsal, and then he had to go back and film, and he didn't start filming until 2 o'clock in the afternoon. He wasn't done till after midnight. And he had school the next day, which he ended up not going to, because obviously he didn't want to make it.
No.
I mean, let's face facts. You're talking about a big sacrifice. And if people think, oh, it's, you know, it's like, oh, my God, these people, you know, for an hour-long show, they're filming for, you know, 40 minutes, because let's face it, there's 20 minutes of commercials. Dude, you're filming for hours, and you're having to do retake after retake after retake, shot after shot. And when you're doing a sitcom, you're performing usually, what, two or three times, and they take bits and pieces from different, you know, tapings that you've done and put that all together as the show. I mean, it's not like...
They said filmed in front of a live studio audience.
It is filmed in front of a live studio audience, but what will happen is they'll film it in front of two or three different studio audiences, and the version you see may not be the one that ends up on TV.
Or even the entirety of one. You might see, you know, your scenes two and three might be there.
Right. Oh, I saw that scene. Oh, that was exactly the one that was, oh, well, that was different. I don't remember seeing that in the scene I saw. Right.
Well, then we shouldn't even talk about reality shows.
No.
Yeah, I don't even want to get started about reality shows.
Jeff, you'd asked me earlier about being the extra part.
Yes. Yes.
And the main difference I'd say there is that, you know, there's both less pressure and more pressure. I say that because there's less pressure. You're not a principal. You're not necessarily one that someone is coming back to and, you know, wanting to make sure that you've read the day, you know, read your lines, gotten them that in the morning, delivered by courier. You've read them. You've memorized them. You have a take on the motivation and all that sort of stuff, that you know where your spots are and what your cues are and where to stand and looking at the tape and getting the makeup. As an extra, mostly they're just worried about, well, do they have the right costume? Are they in the right spot? Did they show up? Can they shut up when we want them to? Good, we don't have to feed them as much. That's great. But then on the other hand, you're a little bit more like, I don't know, one of the groomsmen in a wedding, okay?
Right.
Unless you're the groom or the best man, you're there to balance out the photos. No one cares. The bridesmaids don't. They have a much higher billing than that. The bride sure doesn't, and most of the families don't. So you're there to balance out some of the photos, to not have too much flash, but just sort of give some contrast for the lovely flowers and the lovely women. Extras are kind of like that, too, because for the most part, no one cares who they are. So one of the responsibilities
unless you actually can freeze frame and see their face, which, by the way, you can see you very clearly in one of the shots in the producers.
Well, you know what? That'd be fabulous to find out which one, because I know I hunted, because I kept thinking it'd be on the right side, and then I realized, you know what?
Nope.
It would be on the left.
It'd be on the left. We're on the left.
And since then, I haven't started shooting back, because I knew the color of the flower to look for. Because
I'm just going to say that William was a extra in the producers. The
recent edition.
Yes.
The 2005 version, not the 1969 version.
69.
Yeah,
I don't think you were old enough to be an extra in 1969.
The one with Uma. So.
The one with Uma. Oh my gosh. Yeah, it was good times. We've already been through that, though. I don't want to bore these listeners.
But yeah, there is an episode of Ronnie's on the Radio when we discuss William being a producer. It's on TalkShoe, and you can find it at talk.ronniezone.com. Anyway, we also want to mention this. Now, this may be wow. I don't even know what those words I just said. This may get a bit heated, but I do want to bring this up. So, Colleen, you may sashay around this however you see fit to. We give Jessica Simpson's dad a hard time. We give Lindsay Lohan's dad a hard time. We give parents, we call them momagers, you know, and dadagers, and you know, all these hateful names about parents that are the managers of the kids.
Oh, you mean the pimps?
Give us a glimpse into a normal, average family, and what toll that takes, as far as getting the kid to and from wherever. I mean, let's look at dollars and cents, because people don't think about that. All of a sudden, you know, Haley Joel Osment is this super hit in The Sixth Sense, but what did it take before then? So you can give us a glimpse on that.
Yes, I can, actually. Not only is Noah signed with the agency, but all five of my sister's children are signed with the agency. And as of this point in time, they've all been on auditions. And, in fact, Elijah, who's child number four, and he's 5 years old, he booked a print ad for Hillshire Farms. And he thought that was the most wonderful thing ever. And anyway, the kids are all booked. So what that sometimes means is that Noah has an audition and needs to go be taken up to Hollywood. So my sister will take him. That leaves somebody needs to stay home and watch the kids. With my brother-in-law working, that means either my mom or while I was out for the last 3 months, that would be me. Oh, but wait a minute. Now we also need to take, you know, Micah up to an audition because Micah has an audition today too. So that means Kim's got Noah at one audition. She either has to come back and take Micah, which is usually not a possibility. So that means that somebody else has got to take Micah up to L.A. Oh, that would be me because my mom needs to stay back and watch the kids.
So you were driving for Micah?
Oh, boy.
Micah.
I can mute you.
Thank you.
So that would mean that I would have to go take one of the kids up or stay back and watch the kids, you know, and what happens to that is that it creates a little logistics problem because the fact is we don't live in L.A. We live behind the orange curtain, and because we live behind the orange curtain, it sometimes is a challenge to get to LA without killing yourself and every other person on the freeway because they're all idiots.
Choo-choo, Metrolink.
No, what it is, you know, you it depends on what time you have to get there. And here's the thing that kills me. These people in Hollywood think that they're being kind by saying, we're going to hold kids' auditions at 3 and 4 o'clock in the afternoon so they don't have to be taken out of school. Problem is, when you have kids who are auditioning who live in Orange County or the Inland Empire or San Diego, they have to take the kids out of school most of the day anyway. So why not hold them in the middle of the day, in the morning, or what have you, so that they don't, you know, so you don't have to sit there and fight traffic. So that's a big pain. So it can take a toll because now you got a kid who's, I'm hungry, I need to get something to eat, or I have to go pee now. I'm tired. When are we going to get there? We're almost there. That's one thing. Then you have the kids at home who are frustrated because mommy and daddy are not home. Nana's paying attention to somebody else. Aunt Colleen's doing whatever. So you've got, you know, these kids who are frustrated because they're kind of stuck. Then you get to the audition. And the audition is usually about, 35, 40 kids. And some of them are cute. And some of them are just annoying to the point where you just think to yourself, I wonder if I could be sterile. I wonder if I could be purposely sterilized. Because they're just absolutely out of control, ridiculous, unbelievable.
Yeah, there's mornings I've wished that too, yeah.
Okay, that's a whole nother discussion. We'll save that for a different show. But anyway, so you get this audition. And I learned, not the hard way, thankfully, because my sister had already learned the hard way for me. I took a mic at one of his auditions. Actually, two of them. And the first one, she said, you need to have a size card. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what that means. She says, it's a card that lists all of his clothing sizes. Okay. She says, they need to know this. They're going to ask you to fill out a size card for him. Excellent. You also need to have a headshot and a resume. Great. She says, and don't ask them what to do, because if you do, they're going to know you don't know, and they can't stand dealing with the newbies who don't know what they're doing. Great. So I've got to go into this room where I have no clue where I'm going, park in front of a building that I'm not even sure I'm supposed to park there, and get myself into this place and say, okay, I got to get myself to the point where I have to pretend like I know what I'm doing, which is not easy to do. You get in there, and sometimes they might actually have lines that the kids have to memorize. So if they do, they'll have them on a whiteboard. You'll see them written up there. If not, then, you know, it is what it is. So I get in there, and they thankfully didn't have any lines they had to read, but he did have to, I did have to fill out the size card. And then, you know, you kind of get through this. It's very confusing. They don't always explain what the, you know, things are on the card. So you have to pretend you know what you're talking about, and you don't want to ask anybody because you feel like an idiot. And then they usually will take a picture of the kid, or they'll give, you know, they want the headshot, and sometimes they don't want the headshot. Sometimes they don't want the size card filled out. Sometimes they want something else. And you just kind of have to know what they want. It's really difficult. Hopefully, if you have a good enough agent, which Noah does, you get to get that information ahead of time, and you can prepare better. So it's nice to have a really good agent. Important to have a really good agent.
Did you think that it was easy, or that it was fast, or do you feel that Noah especially, you know, kind of took the same route? I mean, to me, it seems like it happened pretty quick, but I'm just kind of wondering from somebody maybe, you know, that was kind of watching it from the beginning, that it took a while. What do you think?
What's funny is that it seemed like it took a while, but the reality is it really wasn't. It was pretty darn quick. I mean, he had his first job booked within the first 5 months of ever having set foot on a stage, period, end of story. And that was him doing local, you know, plays where the, pretty much the only people that are seeing it are parents and family. So, I mean, when you're talking about, it's not like he's performed in actual real public before. It's not like he's performed in Hollywood or whatever. But it's, you know, he from the first time he set foot on the stage to the first thing he booked, which is the Volkswagen commercial, that was about 5 months. And he'd never really done anything like that before. So it was pretty amazing, very quick. But back to the audition stuff is that, you know, you get in there, and this is the thing that struck me. They tell you that you have a specific time to come in. They want you there at that time, but they won't see you for at least a good half hour to an hour. Sometimes they see you right away, but a good portion of the time, we want you to come at 3:30, and then they don't see you till almost 5. So you sit around and wait, and you sit in this room, this large room usually, a lobby or wherever, with a bunch of other mothers and children, and some of these mothers have done this before, and some of them are just green, 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 green. And you have to kind of help them out, and it's kind of funny because you're going, yeah, I don't know what I'm doing either. So you kind of all help each other out. Some of the mothers are really, really good about that, and some of them are really scary. And, you know, my sister was talking about being on the set with Noah when he filmed the Got Milk commercials and some other sets that he's been on where he's seen some of these mothers who are just, they're momagers. They're scary, scary. And the production people, the crew and the cast and, you know, the producers and directors, they don't want to deal with these moms and dads that are just crazy. And it was funny because the guy who plays Noah's dad in the Got Milk commercials, he had a preconceived notion about my sister and brother-in-law and was pleasantly surprised that they were nothing like what he expected. And in fact, actually, they still talk to each other. They still talk to him. In fact, they went to a birthday party for one of his family members a few weeks ago, and they get along, you know, like they're old friends. Like they've known each other for years. Anyway, but what shocked me, I think, the most was once you do finally get the kid in to see, you don't go in with the kid. They take your kid away, and they put your kid in a room with a bunch of people who talk to your kid, and you kind of trust that everything's okay in there, and you trust your kid's going to do, you know, the right thing. And then you turn around, and 5 minutes later, you're done. And you're going, I just spent 2 hours on the freeway just getting here, number one, for a five-minute audition that he may or may not even get and probably won't because there's, like, 30 other kids who look just like he does and who might be better suited for it. You never know. And maybe blah, blah, blah. And it's like unbelievable. And then you turn around and spend another 2 hours. So you've just wasted almost 5 hours of your day for absolutely nothing. The cost of gas being what it is, it's a big pain. And especially when you're doing stop and go traffic, you're now wasting a ton of gas. I don't know how much my sister spends in gas per week, but it's ridiculous. And she's got a stack of papers, MapQuest directions to auditions and callbacks and other things that's easily 5 inches thick. And that's just from the last 6-7 months. And it's, like I said, sometimes she goes back to the same place. Other times she doesn't. And you don't know if you're going back to the same place. You start to get to know where places are, but you know, it's not easy. And then, you know, I get these phone calls every once in a while. Are you near a computer? Can you tell me an alternate route? I'm stuck in traffic and I want to see if I can get there faster. I want to get home faster. Well, you know, it's like, oh my gosh. She had to buy herself a GPS navigation system that helps her with directions because she got so frustrated. So, anywho, that's kind of the big deal with the whole thing.
Well, let's kind of bring the plane into land. Let's do that. Cool. We covered a lot of ground, and you know, definitely, I'm certainly happy that Colleen is employed. That's a wonderful thing. But also, I think between Colleen and Jeff from Utah, giving us some bits of wisdom about recruiting, about being consultant, back and forth. I think we've had a really, really interesting show. And definitely you'll be hearing more from Jeff and about Jeff coming up pretty quick. So anyway, glad he was here. And also Mr. Buddy Bill gave his insight as well as his experience sitting on a set where Mr. Mel Brooks was around. And then we also talked about Noah in the Got Milk, the new incarnation, that you can see the videos at gettheglass.com. And so anyway, we're going to say goodnight. And I have some x-rays and stuff I got to do tomorrow. So that's what I got to do. So anyway, thanks so much, everybody, for showing up. And this is Roni's Own Radio, and it is a Roni's Own production. You can reach this at talk.roniezone.com. Our website is roniezone.com, and you can email us at jeff.roni@gmail.com or roniezone@gmail.com. And we're going to have fun tomorrow night. If you are available, we're going to have I Know, the trivia game tomorrow at 7 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time at the same URL, talk.roniezone.com. And we're going to have a good time, and that is 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. So we're going to have a great time tomorrow, and if you can make it, great. If not, please send some friends over. We all have friends, and we all have friends that have nothing to do. And if you got a friend that's posting stuff on MySpace, send them our way. We have things for them to listen to. So anyway, thanks again, and we will see you later.
Hi, Patty. Bye-bye.
We have a newcomer, but we're getting ready to leave.
Sorry,
Patty. You missed out. You'll have to download it.
Yeah.
Please download. Thank
and
you.
And tomorrow night.